The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview recorded as part of our MagQuest series at MagFest 10, the Music and Gaming Festival, in National Harbor, Maryland. Enjoy. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakmas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
I'm Benjamin Price.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Continuing our MagQuest series here at the MagFest Music and Gaming Festival. Welcome to the program, Paul Sanders from Loading Ready Run.
Hi, it's Saunders, actually.
Saunders. Shit, start over.
S-A-U-N-D-E-R-S.
No, I'm joking. We're not going to start over.
Okay. Oh, okay.
We don't start over.
I was
over.
Ready on the go.
All right, cool.
Yeah, no, we're doing this live.
But good so to know you're on the trigger with the equipment.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Paul, could you just, you know, briefly introduce yourself and Loading Ready Run and what you guys do?
So I am one of the founders of Loading Ready Run, and we are a sketch comedy website where we produce silly videos, and we have been doing so since 2003. I've been producing at least a video a week, often more than that, for that entire time. And we now currently produce two shows for theescapistmagazine.com, Unskippable and Feed Dump, as well as our own just random sketch comedy that we do, which is also put up on The Escapist. And then we produce Checkpoint for PATV.
Nice. Unskippable, probably, the video that's been most popular, the one that's most well-known?
Yeah, I think Unskippable is probably the best-known series that we do.
Yeah. I mean, we all watch Unskippable. It's great. Big fans.
Thanks.
How did Loading Ready Run form?
Well, it started, my friend and I, Graham, when we were in high school. So we've been friends since like elementary school, but when we were in high school, we did a computer animated film, just the two of us, called After Hours, which it was, you know, we liked it and it was fun and everything. And we won a film festival for the high school and things, but it was not that good in hindsight. But we did that and we really enjoyed doing it and working together. And so we had this idea that we would try to make more films and more videos and stuff. And so we sort of worked on this idea that in order to get better at it, we should just start making movies, start making as many as we could. And so this was back in 2003. So this is pre-YouTube. And so doing video online was actually not that common at that time. So when we first started, we were like, let's see if we can produce one of these just comedy sketches per week. That was just like sort of a random goal that we had. We put one up every Monday or every Friday at that time. And then so we just sort of started doing that and producing them every week. And eventually we sort of got our friends to come in and act in them, because otherwise it would be just the two of us.
Yeah.
And we need somebody, you know, to run camera and all, and boom and all that good stuff. And then after about 3 years, we did a live show called Loading Ready Live, that we took a bunch of our sketches and sort of redid them to work for stage. And we did them in Fringe Festival, just sort of a local group of independent stage stuff.
That's cool. What was it like doing it live?
It was very different. Most of us weren't actually, like, you know, when you're doing video, obviously you have got lots of takes of everything and stuff.
Yeah.
So doing it live, it was neat though. Like, it was, you really sort of feed off the audience and that a little bit, but we haven't done any since. I feel like the video is our strongest medium that we have. You know, we have a lot of skills in that area. So, but the live thing, what it did is, because it takes, you know, it took like 3 or 4 months to rehearse and actually get everything all together, that really brought together a core group of about 7 or 8 of us, that after Loading Ready Live was done, we stayed together and really cemented that as sort of the Loading Ready Run crew.
Okay, actually, my question was next going to be how many people are on the crew.
Yeah, it's varied a little bit over time. Myself and Graham, everyone's friends of ours, but myself and Graham and Jeremy Petter and Matt Wiggins and James Turner and Kathleen DeVere, who joined up a little bit later on. Alex Stacy also joined up, and he hasn't been doing so much stuff with us lately. And Bill Watt and Morgan Van Humbeck, who they started with us, but they have since sort of gone into other things, and they still show up every once in a while. But so there's a little bit of stuff, and Tim Seven Husen, who also he started doing some stuff with us, and then he got married or something. Really took up his time.
Yeah. Lame.
And, you know, went on to graduate school. Just really, really cuts into hanging out with his friends' time.
Yeah, doing internet stuff.
Yeah, yeah, doing stupid things on the internet.
Does everyone sort of have a kind of a set role, or is it sort of just a collective process? Everyone pitches
it's
in.
I mean, people have sort of fallen into roles. Myself and Graham and Kathleen are the primary writers for the show. I personally, just because I was already, that's my job previous to I'm able to do Learning Ready Run full time, was a web developer, and so I do all the website stuff. Graham primarily does all the editing, and often he does the directing as well. So they work together, because once he knows how if he knows what shots he needs in order to do the editing afterwards and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Graham is the editor, and everybody else basically pitches in whenever they can. They do, everybody does acting and throws in, I mean, there's sort of the primary writers, but then everybody sort of throws in ideas and all that stuff. And does camera work or boom or whatever we need at any given time.
Yeah. Now you guys do a lot of stuff. And apart from your internet videos, sort of your main focus, actually one of the things that has gotten you guys a lot of attention, especially outside people who actually watch your videos, is this Desert Bus for Hope charity. Where did you guys, first of all, hear about the game Desert Bus? And also, where'd you get the idea to create a charity revolving around it?
So the ROM, or the ISO for the original Penn & Teller Smoke & Mirrors, because the game was never actually released.
Right, it was going to be on Sega CD.
It was going to be for Sega CD. And so the ISO for the CD was leaked onto the internet about 6 years ago now. And it was just mentioned by a website that I read. And they talked about Desert Bus, and I thought that was really funny. And so I downloaded the ISO, and I had a Sega CD emulator, and I sort of tried it out, and I realized how silly the game is.
Yeah, I guess we should back up a bit. Desert Bus is a mini game that's on this, as you said, unreleased Sega CD game called Penn & Teller Smoke & Mirrors. It's a game where you have to drive a bus from, Tucson to Las Vegas, in real time, and your maximum speed is 45 miles per hour. The road is completely straight. There are, correct me if I'm getting anything incorrect, because I've never actually played it, thankfully.
Yes, I still congratulations.
Or most of it. the road is completely straight. There are no cars, no traffic, no scenery, but the bus every so often veers to the right.
Yeah, well, it's more, it sort of has a constant, alignment problem or something. But the bus sort of constantly slowly moves to the right.
Yeah.
But not enough that you can just hit go left all the time. So you have to, so the idea is that you have to constantly adjust at so that you can't just tape the accelerator down and leave it.
Are there passengers on the bus?
No, the bus is always empty. There are bus stops along the way, which is the only place in the entire game where you can actually stop the bus. You can stop the bus at a bus stop and open the doors, but nobody ever gets
on.
So it just kind of highlights your loneliness.
Nobody ever gets on. Nobody ever gets off.
I'd rather sit here in the desert.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds a little
And you never actually, when you get to, you start in Tucson, when you get to Las Vegas, it's not like you, get to go to Las Vegas. You get just, it doesn't even, appear across the horizon. It's just, you drive for 8 hours, and then it fades to a black screen and says, congratulations, you got to Las Vegas. Do you want to go back?
Yeah. I believe you get
1 point?
Yes, for each run? 1 point. And the point, it's hilarious because the point counter is like nine, it's like 0000001. Like as if you would get like 5 billion points on it.
I mean, it sounds a little bit like a Franz Kafka story or something.
It is. Well, it's cool because it was actually originally made by Penn and Teller and Eddie Gorodetsky, who's the other designer for the game, as a commentary on, at the time, the whole video games cause violence thing. Mm-hmm. And it was Janet Reno who was the one who was really, was sort of the person at the time who was really big on that. And so this was like, they call it a Vera simulator. So the idea was, it was like how, you know, this is actually how, it would be in the real world. Like if we were using video games to teach people how to do jobs,
yeah,
this is actually what it would be like. It wouldn't be, you know, Call of Duty or whatever.
Yeah. How to just descend into a tortured spiral of blank desert insanity. I don't know. It's just making me crazy just talking about the game.
Yeah. It's
So Penn and Teller actually donated money to the charity when you guys started doing it. They got the word out about it, right?
Yeah, the first year actually we started doing it and we sort of said, hey, we're gonna do this, and we posted that we're gonna do it to a few places, and somehow it got back to Penn and or Teller. And it was great. My mom actually got a phone call from Penn's wife. Because at the time, I guess my parents' contact information was like on the domain for Loading Ready Run. And so she got a phone call and so she gave Penn my phone number. And so then, so we started the thing, and like half an hour into starting Desert Bus, I could just get a phone call on my phone. It's like, hey, this is Penn Jillette. And I'm like, oh crap. So like I ran to the room, and sort of at that time we didn't have technology in order to like put a phone call through, so I just sort of put it on speakerphone and held it up to the microphone.
That's great.
Yeah.
Have you guys met them in person?
I've actually met them in person because I just happened to be, I was in Las Vegas, and I went to their show in Las Vegas and like got them to sign a thing afterwards.
Okay.
But that was before Desert Bus.
Yeah. Okay.
I haven't actually met them in person since Desert Bus, but Penn has phoned in on multiple Desert Buses, and for a few years, Teller actually bought us food. He would actually like phone places in Victoria where we're doing it and get them to like deliver us food, and he would pay for it, which is apparently a huge pain in the ass for him, because not a lot of places will take credit card a out of country credit card over the phone from a guy who only actually, his legal name is Teller. He only has one name.
Really? Legal name. I did not know that. I just learned something today.
Also, he's known for not talking.
Yes.
And he's talking to you on the phone. So I would be highly suspicious myself.
That's great. So the idea of the charity, right, is you guys will play the game for as long as people keep donating, or how do you guys set
it up? We decided on a system where it would cost more money the longer we played. So the first hour costs $1.
Mm-hmm.
And the second hour, and then it goes up by 7% every year, or every hour. Sorry. So the first hour is seven, second hour is $1.07. Yeah. And then it just keeps going up and up and up. And through the power of compounding interest, if you learn that in whatever grade math classes, it gets big fast. But not as fast as we might like.
I would figure each of those hours probably feels like a year.
Yeah, well, it's kind of weird. Like, we decided, like, the 7% is basically arbitrary. Mm-hmm. We decided on it because in the first year, when we were just starting out, we didn't know anything. We were like, if we got $5,000, that would be a pretty cool thing. That this event would be a success. And that's more money than we could give just if we just ourselves donated money to Child's Play. And so we were like, okay, if we get $5,000, and then we kind of work back from the $5,000, we're like, we want this event to go longer than like 24 hours, because that's not that impressive. So we want it to be like a good substantial amount of time. So let's have it, if we have it like the whole weekend, like we'll start on Friday and then it'll end sometime on Sunday, that'll be a nice good chunk of time and it'll be great. And so we made the 7% worked out. So then if we got $5,000, it would be about that many hours. And then we ended up getting $22,300. or 200 or something like that in the first year. So we ended up, like, none of us had, like, taken time off work or anything. So yeah, we ended up, like, doing it way longer than we thought. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger every year.
So what is the longest that you guys have made?
Well, this year was the most we've done, which was about $380,000. And we drove for about 6 days,
wow,
I think, straight. We started on Friday at 6 p.m. and I think we ended at on Thursday at like 9 or something. So yeah, it was very long.
All right. Well, before I continue with my questions, do you guys have questions you would like to ask Paul?
I have a couple. Well, especially with that one, when you guys were driving for 6 days straight, I mean, do you drive for a set amount of time and then switch off, or?
Yeah, we have it set up with drivers, that they're sort of designated drivers. And we've tried a few different strategies over the time that we've done it. We started out doing, they would take 4 hour shifts, and we had like four guys that would take 4 hour shifts and it would just cycle out. And then more recently, we actually switched over to each driver. We have five or six drivers, and each driver would do a full 24 hours. And then they'd be done for the whole event. Right. Okay. So they would do 24 hours, and then the next guy would do 24 hours, and it would just keep going like that.
Man.
And that seems to work pretty well. Like, 24 hours is tough, but it's doable for most people. And then they, you know, they do the 24 hours, and then they crash out for, you know, a whole day. And then they sort of come back and start doing stuff again. So
I can believe that.
Yeah, it's but it makes it so it's more, you know, it's sort of an endurance test a little bit.
Okay. Also, now I've been watching Unskippable since you guys did the original Getaway review.
Okay, that was an early one, yeah.
Yeah. And I've been watching it since that, and how long would you say it actually takes to put together an episode of Unskippable? I mean, from the writing to the actual recording of the episode to putting it out.
We've definitely got faster at it as time has gone by. Like, our first couple, we actually wrote a whole script for what we were going to do. And then how we do it now is we'll do what we call a scratch track, where we will capture it, and then we'll just, Graham and I will just look at it, just watch it and record any kind of random ideas that we think of as it goes through. And then we'll take that and then we'll go back over it and record when we, you know, we take whatever ideas we had that were good out of the scratch track and record them again, you know, well. And so we're not like laughing at our own jokes and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll go through and see and if there are any gaps, and we'll try to find jokes to fill it out. So from capturing to the end, it probably takes maybe 4 hours or 4 or 5 hours. So it depends on the video. Some ones just sort of flow really quickly, and some of them can be a little bit more hard fought. But we've got it down so we can do it pretty quick. But okay, it's still trying to find, like, I remember when we were doing the Metal Gear Solid, when we did like a whole bunch of Metal Gear Solid all at once, you know. By the last ones, like, trying to find like new ways of making fun of how old Snake is or whatever can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah. Now, Paul, you put out a video called 3PS3s, which got a lot of, I would say, perhaps unexpected responses, which was the video is basically about you had 3PS3s and nobody else has any. And apparently people did not understand that this was a joke, and you actually received like death threats and hate responses. What were like some of the craziest or even scariest responses you got to this video?
Well, these are all, I wouldn't call them, like, I guess they're death threats technically, but it's like comments on YouTube, right? So it's not
real
dangerous
death threats
or anything.
But
my favorite ones were like, people were like, I am going to like punch you in the face so hard that your glasses break, and then the shards of glass from your glasses go into your eyes. Like, really specific stuff, which is kind of interesting. And then there's my favorite one, which is just, that video gave me AIDS. Or like, that video gave me cancer. Just so, like, it's just weird YouTube people. But the great thing, though, is there's the DVD that we made that actually has that on it. We put in, there's about five or six, like quite a few people who did responses to it, who got the joke, right? And so people did like,
yeah,
I have even more PS3s, or I did this, or people did it, and from all over the world. So people with, you know, from England and Australia and all the different places. So that was very cool. And so we actually contacted the people and asked them if we could include those on our DVD of it, because we thought that was so neat.
Yeah, my favorite part in the video is when you had the three PS3s actually stacked on top of each other. I'm sure that part pissed off a lot of people.
Yeah, actually, fun bit of trivia. At the time, so this was, I mean, the point of the video was that at that time, PS3s were really highly allocated. Nobody could get one. And what is actually there is we have one PS, there's one real PS3, and then there's a PS3, like from a, we know people at Electronics Boutique, GameStop is called here. And so there's like a plastic, it's like a fake PS3 shell.
Oh yeah, the model.
That's like, that they have in the case because they don't want people to steal it, I guess. So we had one of those as like thing, and we had like a cardboard one. And so we didn't actually even have three PS3s during it. So the great shame.
I really pulled a fast one on everybody.
So the stack is not as dangerous as it seems. Yes. we had the non-real PS3s on the top of the stack.
Okay. So how are you enjoying MAGFest this year? Have you guys been to MAGFest before?
We have not. This is the first year we've been here, and it's very cool. We know a couple of the people who are involved in it, and so, you know, they're always like, hey, you got to come to MAGFest, and it sounds really neat. And like, it's always seemed like it would be a great thing for us, and it's, you know, a lot of crossover in our communities and stuff. So it seemed like a great place, but we just haven't been able to. We're from basically as far as you can get away from here while still being in North America.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're like in Alaska, I guess.
how does it compare to other conventions that you guys have been to?
It's interesting because the other convention that we go to on the East Coast is PAX East, of course. Mm-hmm. And so this is quite, it's a neat, much more sort of, I guess, DIY kind of aesthetic. Like at PAX East, it's like, you know, Nintendo and Oblivion and Obsidian and Xbox and, you know, all the like big companies are there with these ridiculous booths, but there isn't so much of the people just doing really neat, crafts of, you know, cool drawings and all that kind of stuff. So I really like that about this. It actually reminds me, there's a convention near us actually in Vancouver that had a lot of the same stuff, but it got, it went under, but so it's neat to sort of have that kind of aesthetic.
Which one was that?
It's called Anime Evolution.
Okay.
And, it was a primarily an anime convention, but they invited us up to come just cause I guess they liked us. So we were at PAX Prime, this last year, in Seattle, and some of the organizers for MAGFest came and were like, you guys, you know, we really want you to come to MAGFest. And we're like, we can't, it's so expensive to fly all the way over there and international flights. And we can't bring that much merchandise because it's all flying and everything. It's like, we can't justify the expense. And they're like, we'll fly you in and we'll pay for your hotel. And we're like, we are there.
Nice.
we are totally there.
Can't say no to that. This hotel is... Hotel's ridiculous too.
Pretty fancy.
Yeah, I think this whole like hotel with attached convention center thing could really take off. I think it's a great idea.
It's, I mean, compared to last year, the hotel they had it at was, I don't know, maybe like a third the size, and they had everything is in one giant room, like one giant room for all the games, one giant room for all the marketplace, one giant room for the bands. At the last year, you guys remember, like, things were out in the hallway, tables were everywhere, things were in the lobby. I mean, it was insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they hit the total attendance cap for the place. So.
At 3,000.
Yeah, so yeah, well, it looks like there's some room to expand here, too. Which
would
be nice, so.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly fine with coming back here again next year. What are some of the guests or artists here that you guys are most excited about seeing as fans?
We're friends with the guys from Extra Credits, mm-hmm. so that was really, it was great to sit in on their panel and see all the cool stuff that they were working on. And of course, just trying to remember everybody.
Yeah, I think we're doing an interview with James Portnow, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a very cool guy.
Yeah.
Guys from like Screw Attack and things. We're kind of less involved in the music aspect of it.
Okay.
I mean, of course, I forget his name now, but the guys doing the concert tonight.
Nobuo Uematsu.
Yeah, Nobuo Uematsu, of course.
Yeah.
I don't think we're actually going to be able to get to his concert because we're doing other stuff. But that's definitely, but yeah, we're not so tied in with the actual video game music aspect of the market. Although we are the Big Giant Circles, he did an album called Big Giant Circles for released for Desert Bus that was really great. So,
okay. Well, I personally don't have any more questions at this point. If you guys have questions that you would like to ask, feel free. You know. Otherwise, are there any other upcoming projects or things that you'd like to plug? Things that you'd like to announce?
There's just all our videos that come out every week. We are also about to start release a project that we've been working on with Wizards of the Coast called Friday Nights, which is going to be about us, the Loading Ready Run crew playing Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
And all the and various trials and tribulations that we get up to. So that's going to be sort of a mini series that we just finished actually shooting it and editing it and everything. So that should be coming out in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so you guys are big Magic the Gathering fans?
We are. It actually happened. We were big fans when we were in like high school, and then just in the last couple of years, we got sort of pulled into it again.
Yeah, actually, Ben is a pretty big Magic fan.
It was one of these things where we were at PAX and they released they put little like starter decks in the swag bags that they gave away. And man, however much it cost them to do those starter decks, it was worth it. Because it got the whole Loading Ready Run crew, it got us interested in Magic, and we have spent a lot of money on Magic cards since.
Oh, I know.
We possibly paid for that entire thing just ourselves.
Oh, I know. Back in college, like sophomore year of college, people on my floor started getting back into Magic, and then they discovered that you could order individual cards online, and it turned into a Magic arms race.
That's dangerous.
People are spending like $40, $50 like every other week on Magic cards. I was like, I'm out, guys. I'm out of this.
All right. We have a question from Brian, and then I think we should wrap it up after that.
All right. Okay. The way that you describe the driving game, what kind of stuff do you do while you're doing it, like when you're playing the game, that prevents you from going crazy?
Well, I mean, part of it is just the whole idea with the Desert Bus for Hope marathon is that we stream it live on the internet and we have like a chat, and so we talk to people. We're constantly like doing stupid things like dancing or singing or mm-hmm. or doing challenges for people just basically to keep us entertained.
Okay, so it's not just us sitting there playing it.
we try to keep it like it's basically we see it as like a telethon. Like we try to we stream it onto the internet and we try to make it an entertaining show. And we do auctions and stuff. So the driver is sort of involved with that, although they have to keep paying attention to the screen. And then there's also, when you're playing it, you can do, there's sort of, I guess what game designers would call like emergent gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Because the game is so ridiculously boring, anything that you can do to entertain yourself is something like, when it goes to nighttime, the entire screen is like dark, except for you can just see like the yellow lines going down this mm-hmm. path and your headlights. And so what we figured out you could do is we cut out a picture of a Star Fox fighter and attached it to the TV. And so you could look like the yellow lines were like lasers. We were very tired at that time.
I bet.
But there's lots of like... Just sort of trying to like keep it all on one, like trying to keep the bus on one side of the road and trying to keep it on the other side of the road. Like you try to do anything to keep your sanity.
All right. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. You can check out Loading Ready Run, some of their stuff on the Escapist, also on their website, which is
loadingreadyrun.com.
Easy to remember.
And that's, loadingreadyrun.com has all our stuff, whether on PATV or The Escapist.
Yeah.
We sort of aggregated all together there, so that's the best place to go.
All right, well, thank you, Paul, for joining us. Thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Thank you.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.